Coming up on this episode of Inside the Epicenter.
Israel had to do all of its business with Europe and the United States because nobody wanted to do business with them in the region. Now, 77 flights back and forth a week between the United Arab Emirates, Israel, and back. That's amazing.
Who is Benjamin Netanyahu? And what drives his unprecedented, incredible outreach to evangelicals? Hi, welcome to Inside the Epicenter with Joel Rosenberg, a very special episode of our podcast. It's a podcast of the Joshua Fund, ministry dedicated to blessing Israel and her neighbors in the name of Jesus. I'm Carl Muller, executive director of the Joshua Fund, and today I'm in Jerusalem with Joel Rosenberg.
Amen.
Hey,
well,
Joel.
Glad to have you here.
Well, we're going to get to that question in a moment about Benjamin Netanyahu, but the third country on our recent Abraham Accords delegation that we visited was Israel.
Yeah.
Of course, where we are right now, this beautiful, amazing, God-blessed land. We met with so many senior officials. I don't think we can cover them all in this podcast, but American ambassadors, we met with
bipartisan,
with
a Republican ambassador under Trump and a Democrat under President Obama.
Yeah, and we also met with the former Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. Yeah. But before we do that, I wanted to just ask you some of your personal highlights from bringing the delegation to your country, Israel, where you live.
Well, thank you, Carl. It's an exciting thing because of all the seven delegations that I've led, I've actually never led a delegation to Israel. Not meaning I brought thousands. We brought thousands and thousands of evangelicals to come and see and tour and do prayer and vision trips.
Yeah.
We've done conferences here and so forth. I've never been invited to bring evangelical leaders to meet with senior leaders here in the government of Israel. And so that was new. It was new terrain for me, and it was exciting, especially because it was designed by the Israelis, the Emiratis, and the Bahrainis to be an Abraham Accords delegation, right? It was designed to let's look at and show you all as evangelical leaders, business leaders, and media leaders, journalists, what's really happening, why we signed the Abraham Accords, and how it's actively working. Is it working, and how, and what are the implications, and will this thing expand to other countries? So all that to say, that was exciting to me because I'd never done it before at that level. The second thing is because with our news services, All Israel News, All Arab News, a lot of what we were doing, not all, was on the record. Mm. And even the things that weren't on the record in all three countries, we were told, sir, you can say that we met. Here are the pictures that you can show. You can certainly describe, your observations of these meetings. But we'd love to have some of these meetings to be off the record, or what Washington would, or journalists would call deep background. Why? So we can be more candid with you. You'll really know what we think about these topics. Right. We just want to be, sensitive to every little nuance of our words so that, so don't quote us, thought by thought, verse by verse, as it were. So that was good. And I think that Israel is itself changing so much. I mean, most American evangelicals think of Israel, they only know one leader's name, Benjamin Netanyahu. Why? Because he's been on the political scene for 35 years or whatever. And he was the longest serving prime minister in the modern history of Israel. Right. And so it's the name that everybody has known. It'd be interesting to do a poll. I don't want to waste the money. Who's the current prime minister of Israel? I don't think you'd get many evangelicals knowing the names.
Right.
Even if you gave multiple choice, you might be like, maybe, but it'd just
they'd
be spitballing.
Right.
Well, they're right. They might. He's currently the opposition leader.
Right.
So that range of change, right? Not just change in the region, but change here in Israel. Like for the last 12 years, we had one prime minister, and he's the one who negotiated all the Abraham Accords deals. And now he's not in office.
Yeah.
Right? So that was interesting. He's the one that signed the Abraham Accords as prime minister at the White House.
Yeah.
September 15th, 2020. I was watching him on the lawn, covering it for All Israel News, but now he's not in power. Now we'll get to what he, what's his future, what's his current. But all of that was interesting. But some of the people that I also had been getting to know, I was excited to bring you all to get to know, like Benny Gantz.
Right.
Benny Gantz is the defense minister. of Israel. He himself is a former chief of staff of the entire Israeli Defense Forces, right? Yeah. So this is a guy, the Hebrew term is Ramatkal. This is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff for Israel. So he had not only been a soldier and a general, but he became the top general.
Indeed.
And then now he's the defense minister. This is the guy who's going to be in charge of going to war with Iran if we have to go to war with Iran.
Sure.
So I've gotten to know him over the last several years, and one of his questions to me over the last several years has been, I don't have any relationships with evangelical leaders. Would you help me start to build those? What happened was my answer was yes, but COVID's answer was no. There was nobody to bring to him for him to meet, right? He had a different political philosophy than Netanyahu, a different outlook, a different style for sure. But I'm trying to get to know leaders of all kinds and multiple different parties here and not just be, you know, wed to or connected with one political party, one particular political party. So that was important. I thought that for him to give us whatever it was, an hour, 90 minutes almost, in the Kiria, which is the Pentagon of Israel.
Totally cool. Yeah. Totally.
I'd never been in there.
You know, blow my mind to be in the sort of Situation Room in the Pentagon of Israel.
And even he gave us some time while he was still finishing a meeting just to be there. Yeah. And we had time just to talk and to chat. And that was really interesting. Again, one of my sons, Jonah, who now works for the Joshua Fund, he was a soldier who actually briefly was assigned to work for a general at the Kiria. I'd never been there. So even though I'd known Gantz, I'd already met with him at one of his private offices or something outside the defense establishment. Again, in the moment where Iran is 5 days away from having enough fuel, if they decide to make the decision to suddenly start building nuclear weapons, and to be able to sit with the Israeli defense minister who is as experienced as anybody. Sure. It's not like some guy who, some political appointment. Oh, you know, once we had a trade minister, the head of the labor minister, labor unions, because of the political arrangements, he became the defense minister.
Yeah.
No experience. And you thought, that's a little scary. I'm not, you know, maybe he can do the job, but don't you want someone who really
has
knows
done
what he's
it?
Talking about?
Yeah.
So those were some of the things. There are others. I don't want to keep going on and on. But I found it exciting to have gone to the Arab countries, have heard what we heard at the highest levels or nearly the highest levels, and then come back here and process it in the context of hearing from Israelis.
Well, I was going to ask you that question. Following up from the times we've talked about both Bahrain and UAE, the countries we visited, the other countries we visited on this delegation, when you talk to Israel, what is in it for them in these Abraham Accords? I can see, you know, the UAE and Bahrain saying Israel has a military, very extensive protection. But what's in it for Israel? Because we know Israel's going to go against Iran if push comes to shove, no matter what.
So that's a good point. And I'm glad you brought up, because we probably should have talked about it in both the Bahraini podcast and the UAE. Like, what do they think is in it for them?
Right.
So let's start there. Meaning, look, the Bahrainis and the Emiratis see Israel as the most powerful country in the region, right? Israel is the regional superpower when it comes to military. And in terms of technology, advanced high-tech technology, Israel is the superpower of the region. In terms of entrepreneurialism, it's certainly a leader. I would say the UAE is the Arab leader, and Bahrain is doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. So culturally, in terms of innovation, of branding themselves as, you know, a country that are trying to change the world through their technologies, through their industry, through their businesses, these countries are similar and similar values of, you know, Bahrain and UAE are welcoming in workers from all over the world to help them. Israel is welcoming in Jews from all over the world to come in, settle, and help them build the most advanced country in the region. But you're right. Ultimately, a big part of this is security and intelligence, and the Bahrainis and the Emiratis had sort of quiet, behind the scenes, under the radar security cooperation. But now they can be open and say, we have to build a regional alliance against the Iranian regime, against that threat. And one of the things I recommended to the Bahrainis and the Emiratis is, this is a good moment to say to Israel openly, as well as behind the scenes, let's build a regional multi-layered missile defense system that can protect everybody in this region from Iranian missiles, as well as missiles built by Iran but given to these terrorist proxy organizations, Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis in Yemen, Hamas in Gaza. Apparently, if you're a terrorist organization connected to Iran, you have to have an H at the beginning of your name. Hezbollah, Houthis, Hamas. But anyway, so there's a lot of reasons. And of course, all of these guys, they want to do trade. Israel had to do all of its business with Europe and the United States and a little bit, you know, China and elsewhere, because that nobody wanted to do business with them in the region. Now, again, we mentioned in the last podcast, 77 flights back and forth a week between the United Arab Emirates, Israel, and back. That's amazing. Yeah. People are going. Venture capitalists are going. People are excited about trying to figure out. I would love, on the All Israel, All Arab News side, I want to start a bureau in Abu Dhabi or Dubai or something. So anyway, so I think from the Israel side, the main thing that Israel wants is to be welcomed in the region. That sounds fuzzy, but it's important because it's sending a message to all of its enemies. You cannot get rid of us. And the Arabs are basically deciding, okay, if we can't beat them, maybe we should join them.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
Yeah.
They couldn't beat us. God was merciful. It wasn't really so much because of us, although there's a lot of courage and of our Israeli soldiers and things. But ultimately, the Arabs realize these guys are strong, and they're so strong. Maybe rather than trying to get rid of them, maybe we should form an alliance, economy, trade, investment, healthcare, you know, cybersecurity and missile defense against people who really want to kill all of us. The radical Islamists, the apocalyptic Islamists that we've talked about on other shows. And Israel wants that too.
Yeah.
And I think the big prize remains the Saudis. A Saudi-Israeli peace and normalization agreement would be the mother of all Arab-Israeli deals. And, you know, I think that's a real possibility. But I think the Saudis are watching very closely. Are these other Abraham Accords countries, are these agreements working?
Are they working?
How are they working? What does it look like? How does Israel operate in this new environment? And how do Arabs in Bahrain, UAE, Sudan, Morocco, Muslims in Kosovo, how are they feeling about this relationship with Israel? Are they happy with their governments? Do they feel like, as citizens, they are benefiting from a relationship with Israel rather than thinking, well, how does that, what does that mean to me? How does that help me?
Yeah.
I think the Saudis are watching very closely.
You know, I agree. And I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought out what's really still moving and shaking as far as the benefits to these countries of joining together. And fascinating to realize that there's more in common than they have difference. And of course, the differences are profound, religiously speaking.
And I think we mentioned this in the last podcast, but just since we're here and we're talking about Israel, we're right here in Jerusalem.
Yep.
Literally, in the last 24 hours, Israel and the United Arab Emirates has signed the first ever in all of human history, Arab-Israeli free trade agreement.
It's amazing.
I should probably correct that. I think Queen of Sheba, the Arabian monarch, did sign a really good trade deal with King Solomon. So, yeah, there's a biblical example. And King Hiram of Lebanon had a wonderful deal with both David and then Solomon to help build the temple. And
but
so
it's been a while.
Really have to go back into the roots of the Bible. So it's nice to see it bubbling up in modern times.
Well, we're going to come back to some of these really interesting characters we had a chance to meet.
Oh, we met some characters.
We met some amazing humans. Yeah. And I really felt like there was some insight to Israel that I've never had before. And we're going to talk about that after we come back from our break. Okay. Our verse of the day today is found in Romans chapter 1, verse 16, from the New American Standard Bible. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. And our prayer request today is, one, to pray for more Israelis to find love and acceptance in Yeshua, Jesus, their Messiah. And two, for Israeli believers in Yeshua to have boldness and sensitivity in sharing Jesus' hope and love with their neighbors. Joel, it's been
so wonderful to recount this this great Abraham Accords delegation we
had. So glad you came.
It was so great. And some of the people we met were amazing. And I want to talk about one that, before we get to former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the Minister of Religious Affairs, Matan Kahana, a fascinating individual, great story and background. And of course, representing Israel to an evangelical delegation. You want to talk a little bit about our time with him?
This guy is really interesting. So Matan Kahana is, here's the short version. The short version is he was a commando in Israel's most elite special forces unit known as Sayeret Matkal. Now, when he was in there, that's the Delta Force of Israel, okay? The you know, Delta Force recruits from all the other special forces, and then you have to try to get into Delta, you know, if you're even recruited. This is Sayeret Matkal. It doesn't even answer to the chief of staff of the army. It answers to the prime minister. This is like this is the elite.
The Praetorian
Netanyahu
guy.
Had been one. Netanyahu's brother had been Sayeret Matkal, Matan Kahana. So that's you learn a lot just by knowing that. You also need to know that this is where Kahana met Naftali Bennett. Now, again, we're not doing a quiz, but if we were, who's the current prime minister of Israel?
Oh,
bing, Naftali Bennett. Naftali Bennett is not only a former Special Forces Sayeret Matkal, but then he became a businessman who went into the high-tech industry and made $400 million in the sale of just one of his companies. Okay, the guy really knows what he's talking about. And he was the defense minister, he was the education minister. Anyway, now he's the prime minister. So Kahana's a super close friend because they know each other. They're army buddies, right? So when you learn about Israeli culture, one of the things you learn is the friends you make in the army at 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, these are your friends for life. Like, you may make other friends, but you may not make any friends as close as the guys that you were jumping out of planes
for
with and in special forces. So that's where Kahana started. But then, like, you know, we have this expression in Hebrew, Dayenu, like being in the top of the creme de la creme of the elite forces, Dayenu, this alone would be enough. But oh no, there's more. He decides, I want to be an F-16 pilot. That seems like a good job. I'm gonna do that. So he not only does it, and like, you know, that's not an easy thing to get into, but he becomes one of the best F-16 pilots in Israel. And then, double Dayenu, now he becomes squadron leader of his F-16 squadron. Wow. Triple Dayenu. Yeah. So this is his military career. Now, he's very religious, and by that I mean modern Orthodox, which Naftali Bennett is also, meaning kippah wearing, yarmulke wearing, believes in what we would call the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures, the Torah, the Tanakh, and is religiously observant.
Right.
What makes him interesting, however, is that he really likes people who, and has built a good working relationship in his life with people who don't agree with him. Israelis, but also he became very fond of some evangelical pastors who sort of adopted his unit during one of the wars and just saw and came to visit them and bring them food and, I don't know, pray for them and just be encouraging. And it touched him.
Yeah.
He's a man of faith and he likes meeting people of faith, even though he doesn't agree with evangelicals on who Jesus is. So that's really interesting. Now, Naftali Bennett decides, I'm going to build a political party, and I'm going to go into the Knesset, the parliament, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to become the prime minister. And Matan, I want you to be in my party. Matan's like, I didn't really have any interest in being in politics, but yes, my friend asked me, I did it. And so they are the ruling party now. Now, let's not get it. We don't have time in this podcast to get into the troubles that Naftali Bennett's having with this coalition. But I would argue, from my observation, and now getting to know Matan Kahana a bit, I think he is the most or one of the most loyal to the prime minister, even though he's an independent thinker. What makes him interesting to me is he's really taken on some major reforms within Orthodox Judaism that the Orthodox Jewish leadership does not want him to make. Mm-hmm. It's too nuanced, too in the weeds for this podcast, but he is facing serious opposition from very religious people here who are, you know, castigating him in every possible way. And he, you know, he's a fighter, right? We just talked about it's hard to get this guy to buckle, right?
Yeah.
So he wants to build relationships with evangelicals. And I've just enjoyed hearing him a few other occasions, and then his willingness to meet with us on Yom HaShoah, the Holocaust Memorial Day. Not like he's not a busy guy. He is a very busy guy as religious affairs minister, close to the prime minister. And he said yes. And we had an amazing time with him.
It was truly insightful. And again, you know, just the willingness to talk and to share that story about the pastor flying from Pennsylvania to his unit to pray with him before they went into action.
And I want to make this point. Joshua doesn't take any political position. We are a nonpartisan organization in the United States, as well as here and anywhere else. So we're not trying to, we're just trying to get to know everybody that has any influence that we ought to get to know, pray for, encourage, and learn from in whatever party. That's why we met with both the Trump ambassador to Israel and the Obama ambassador to Israel. And I invited the Biden ambassador to Israel to meet with us. He was going to be out of town, but he did meet with me privately the day before the delegation began. So we're doing this across the board. And that's what I'm saying, you know, whether it's Netanyahu or Matan Kahana, who, you know, obviously, Bennett is not Bibi Netanyahu is not happy with Naftali Bennett because they're political opponents. And Matan Kahana is on the other side. But again, and Benny Gantz is a completely other party from these others. That's part of what we're doing. We're not taking a position. We're trying to get to know leaders. The poorest of the poor and the most powerful.
We have the most trouble in America just with two parties. You have so many parties here in Israel. But you brought up the two ambassadors, both the Obama administration ambassador to Israel.
Dan Shapiro.
And then the Trump ambassador to Israel.
David Friedman.
Why did you want us to hear from both of those?
Well, first, I think it's interesting that these two are both Jewish.
Yeah.
It used to be that it was verboten. You're German, so okay, that's one of my few German words that I know. Verboten, like forbidden to be a U.S. ambassador to Israel and be Jewish. Why? Because there was this view in the State Department and in Washington generally that you would be not loyal as a Jew, as an American Jew, to America. You would go over there and be more loyal to Israel than to America. Not fair, but part of an anti-Semitic culture of the past. Now, David Friedman, so Dan Shapiro was the first Jewish ambassador that I'm aware of. He served under President Obama. Then David Friedman was appointed, and he's an Orthodox Jewish. Dan is not religious, but traditional, and David Friedman is modern Orthodox. And the current ambassador, Tom Nides, who's Biden's ambassador to Israel, he himself is also Jewish, from Minnesota, kind of liberal, not particularly religious, but respectful of religion. This is the trifecta of Jewish ambassadors from different administrations.
Yeah.
I wanted me to hear from very different perspectives on how the United States leadership sees Israel, again, from two very different vantage points at critical seasons in the U.S.-Israel relationship.
Yeah.
And again, just trying to be nonpartisan and therefore bipartisan, I thought was important.
Well, they were both very fascinating, but I particularly like David Friedman discussing the decision-making process within the Trump White House about moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Maybe you can share a little bit about that conversation.
Right. So again, you know, part of the reason to meet with Ambassador Friedman is because you're in the room where it happens, right? To go full Hamilton on you, right? And you're now meeting with a leader who was part of the decision-making process to make the most consequential decision in the history of U.S.-Israel relations since a Democrat, Harry Truman, recognized the state of Israel's independence in 1948, 11 minutes after Israel declared independence. Yeah. This is a big moment. U.S. presidents since 1995 have promised to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. The Congress passed a law that President Bill Clinton signed in 1995 saying they would do it. No one did it. Not from the Democrat, not from the Republicans. It never happened. And so to hear the process of David Friedman being in the room counseling President Trump to do it. Now, Trump had promised it too.
Yeah.
Everybody promises.
Right.
That was not the issue.
Right.
The issue was, are you going to do it? And of course, Friedman told us the story that the Secretary of State at the time, Rex Tillerson, was dead set against it.
Yes.
The Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, dead set against it. The Defense Secretary, dead set against it. Almost everybody, except for Mike Pence, the Vice President, right. Mike Pompeo, who was CIA Director at the time, yeah. but in the CIA Director role, you're not supposed to take any policy position.
Right.
You can only tell people what might happen, what might not happen, what does an intelligence say. You can't make a policy recommendation. So pretty much it was Pence and Friedman against everybody.
Right.
And Trump inclined to do it, but listening to his top advisors tell him that's bad, that's going to blow up the region, it's going to blow up our relationships with everybody. You can't make peace. You want to make peace. It's never going to happen. And for Friedman, basically, to explain the case that he made, yeah, super interesting. And then if that, you know, if that weren't enough, then the question was, what about the peace deal, the deal of the century, right? And then to be part of that team that put this thing together, you know, Friedman and Jason Greenblatt and Jared Kushner and others. Yeah, it was really interesting to hear how do they craft the plan that would create a Palestinian state, which Trump had said that he was against, but then he created that offer. How is that going to work? And then when that was rejected by the Palestinians, how did the Abraham Accords get made? Friedman was part of all of it. So I think it's, you know, I just think evangelicals, the more we can hear from actual participants,
yeah.
this is how you have a better sense. You might not, people might not agree with Friedman on everything or anything, but I think it's important to hear. And the same thing with Dan Shapiro. Again, Obama had a very contentious relationship with Israel, right? It's Obama that wanted to divide Jerusalem and bring Israel back to the 1967 lines that most Israelis, not all, believe are indefensible and therefore not the starting point for a serious deal with the Palestinians. It was President Obama with Biden at his side who made the original Iran nuclear deal that many people are critical of and that Trump ripped up. So to hear in one day, both of them, you know, separately, we kept them, you know, in a separate cities, separate meetings. But anyway, no, they're friendly to each other. But it was really interesting because you so rarely hear this. You usually just hear a bunch of sniping on CNN or MSNBC or even Fox. You don't get to hear from the people in the room.
Yeah.
And again, like them, love them, hate them, agree with them or disagree with them. At least you're understanding what were they seeing and what were they hearing.
Yeah. And I was also struck by the reality that even in Israel, you know, those that are what we would consider on the left or progressive side of the equation, they're still pro-military in Israel. You know, the idea that
they don't want to get wiped out.
They don't want to get wiped out. And this is an important distinction between much of the left in America and the left here in Israel. But let's talk for a moment about somebody that we have to talk about because we started the podcast about him, Benjamin Netanyahu, and the opportunity we had to meet with him on the delegation and some of the conversations and some of the history. It'd been several years since you'd had a conversation with
him.
Well,
yeah, right? 14 years.
Yeah.
So I worked for him very briefly.
Yeah,
I worked for him very briefly in the fall of 2020 as a junior person on his comeback campaign team. He didn't come back for nine more years. And from 2008, which was my last time I'd met with him in person, until that meeting in April 2022, no one had allowed me to come and have a meeting with him. So that's a 14 years, a long time. That's a separate, you know, why, I'm not entirely sure why, but the point is, so why is this night different from all other nights? Why did we suddenly get a meeting? I will be honest, because of 14 years of not meeting with him, I wasn't even going to ask for a meeting with him because it seems not, you know, why do that, you know? And but I was setting up the whole delegation through the ambassadors in Washington, through Yusuf Al-Otaiba, the Emirati ambassador in Washington, through Sheikh Abdullah bin Rashid Al-Khalifa, who's the Bahraini ambassador in Washington, and through Ambassador Michael Herzog, who's the Israeli ambassador in Washington. And the protocol is you ask for the opposition leaders meeting as well as the prime minister and whomever else. Unfortunately, the prime minister, Naftali Bennett, didn't choose to have, or, you know, he didn't have the time or he didn't choose to make the time to meet with us. And the foreign minister, unfortunately, who's a friend of mine, was out of the country, Yair Lapid. But, you know, meeting with the defense minister and everybody else, okay, do I even put a letter in? But I did because I just thought that's the right thing to do.
Sure.
And okay, so they'll say no. And they didn't say no. And so, okay. And it was a very interesting meeting. Look, again, I want to underscore this because, you know, Netanyahu is the most controversial leader in the modern history of Israel. And there'll be people watching or listening to this podcast who think that is a bad idea. Why would you meet with him?
Yeah.
And of course, our Palestinian friends would think, you know, he's the Antichrist to them in many ways. So why did we meet with him? And the answer is we're trying to understand the thinking of any Israeli leader that will meet with us. And if the Palestinians open the door, we would go meet with them. And if the Bahraini leaders and Emirati leaders and Saudi leaders and Egyptian and Jordanian, I want to hear from all of them. I want to understand what they're thinking, and I want to pray for them, and I want to be an ambassador for Christ to them and to their families and their teams and their countries. So Netanyahu is the most consequential prime minister in the modern history of Israel, certainly one of them. I guess David Ben-Gurion, the founding prime minister, is right up there. But in terms of four Arab-Israeli peace deals, five Muslim-Israeli peace agreements, no Israeli prime minister in history has ever done it. Don't you want to meet with that person?
Yeah.
The person that went to Washington to take on President Obama and say, no, we appreciate you want to stop the Iranians from getting a nuclear weapon, but this deal will not do it. That was a very controversial decision for Netanyahu to give that speech. As I describe in Enemies and Allies, I was actually at that speech. Yeah. And that speech continues to reverberate both positively and negatively through the entire region. So to me, getting to meet with people that talk about it being in the room where it happened.
Oh,
you know, Netanyahu is also the prime minister that ordered the Israeli secret services, the Mossad, to sneak into Iran a couple of years ago and steal their entire nuclear weapons archive of how to build weapons.
Yeah.
They stole several tons of material in the middle of the night with blowtorches and ski masks. I mean, this is going to be a movie someday.
It's got to be.
I wish that I was writing it, but I usually deal with fiction. To meet with people who make these decisions. Again, you don't have to love every decision. Yeah. I met with President Trump, and I didn't agree with him on everything.
Sure.
And I met with Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, the most controversial leader in the Arab world. Look, meeting with someone and getting to know them and listening to their point of view is not assent. It's not endorsement. Sure. You're getting to know them.
Right.
And I think that's an important thing. One of the Joshua Fund mission statements is to educate Christians around the world about what's happening in Israel and what's happening in the region.
Sure.
And therefore, the more you understand, the more you know, you have maybe a more up-to-date sense of how to be taking scripture and praying specifically. Anyway, I'm willing to take all the slings and arrows for doing it because I don't think it was wrong.
Right.
And I'm not going to apologize for that. I know it'll offend people, but I'm not trying to be offensive. I'm trying to learn. And the moment that Palestinian Chairman Mahmoud Abbas invites me to Ramallah to sit down with him, I'll go.
You're going. Yeah.
And maybe if the Iranian Ayatollah invites me, I may not go because I don't think I'm
security.
Getting out. Right. I mean, it's a one way ticket. Right. So, you know, but I want to hear people and I want to learn. And I think that's important, both as for delegations and also for All Israel News, All Arab News, to get direct source material.
Well, if I may, I would say a comment that I've mentioned on some of these other meetings, but just there was a degree of warmth there. First of all, Netanyahu has no doubt a gravitas of a world leader.
Oh, yeah. You're not meeting with a provincial mayor.
That's right.
This is
someone
leader.
He comes in and you feel that. But also, he just had a great deal of warmth for everyone in the room, but particularly for you. And I
was striking because he had chosen not to meet with me for 14 years for whatever reason. That was
obviously over. And I think that, you know, when we have the opportunity, when you have the opportunity as, you know, the founder of the Joshua Fund and as someone who has founded Near East Media and All Arab and All Israel News Services to get these invitations, I think it's remarkable that you have a profound chemistry, if you will, with these leaders. And it's one of the most impressive things about these conversations. Mm. It's not stilted. It's not stiff. Mm. It's warm. And I just so appreciated that.
Well, I appreciate it, too. I find myself surprised often. One, that the door opens at all.
Yeah.
Second, that these leaders give us as much time as they do, because these are world leaders. They're certainly regional leaders, and, you know, their day is filled with other regional leaders. What do I bring to the table? Yeah. What does the Joshua Fund or, you know, All Israel News, whatever, what are we delivering to a foreign minister of the UAE or to a former prime minister, now opposition leader, or whomever, a defense minister who's in charge of keeping Israel safe from annihilation, from a second Holocaust? Yeah. Why should they make time for us? And I think the simplest answer, if you do the algebra, you take out all the equation, you make it the simplest, the answer is they want relationships with evangelicals because they understand that there are 60 million evangelicals in the United States who mostly love Israel but need to understand how to stand with Israel, or the Arab side want to build a friendship with evangelicals. Why? Because they want a large swath of America to know that they're not extremists. Yeah. They're not apocalyptic, end of the world, Iranian regime, you know, lunatics. That they're trying to make major reforms, positive reforms, progressive reforms, pro-religious freedom reforms, pro-economic growth reforms, pro-peace reforms. This is who they are. And they feel like the major media, the mainstream corporate media, is not listening, yeah, or is snarky and cynical and doesn't care and won't give them coverage. And therefore, their main ally in the world, the United States, the American people don't know who they are. And that is a scary place, not just infuriating. Yeah. I mean, I think evangelicals generally understand how we are treated by the media. We've, yeah, dealt with other, you know, other podcasts times, yes, on, you know, being mocked Rolling by the Stone. Rolling Stone or whomever. But if you're a country whose existence depends in a significant degree on your close alliance with the world's only superpower, if the people of that superpower have no idea who you are, or they don't understand the challenges you face, and if they think of you as part of the enemy camp or not the trustworthy ally camp, this is a serious problem. Okay. And I believe that's the number one reason they're reaching out. Why they reach out to me, mostly I don't know, but I think they didn't know who to reach out to. Like, there is no, we don't have a pope.
Yeah.
There is no Vatican. Where would you go? I guess you could call up the National Association of Evangelicals and say, who's the president today, or the head of the National Religious Broadcasters? They could have done that, but they saw me because King Abdullah had essentially said, I want to build a friendship with that guy.
Yeah.
Not alone, not in exclusion of everybody else, but right, that maybe is a way.
Yeah.
President Sisi of Egypt decided to invite me as the first ever leader of a delegation that they'd never done before in Egypt. Yeah. You have to go back to Moses bringing Aaron into the palace. I mean, maybe it's ever happened, but no one's ever told me it's happened.
Yeah.
I say it with a little bit of extra time just to say the reason is the intense level of felt an existential need to form the closest possible bonds with the United States while it remains a superpower, right? Yeah. And these are small countries facing major dangers. And what's interesting to me, among other things, is the Arab countries now feel like Israel. They feel like people are threatening to wipe us off the planet.
Right.
We cannot ignore the threats from Tehran. We cannot ignore what's happening in Moscow and an evil leader invading one country after another and arming our worst enemies. We have to figure out how to get closer to the United States, closer to Israel, and closer to each other.
Yeah.
That's a set of challenges that every country in the region whose leaders get it are trying to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
And that's really the reason I/we are getting involved. I could go by myself. I don't think that's fruitful. Mm. I would be honored, but I think the more leaders that they meet, you can't take 50 into a room. You won't be able to have a conversation.
Right.
But take a dozen or 15. Now and each of them can begin to go report to their own sectors, yep, their spheres of influence, what they saw and they heard.
Sure.
I'm not asking anybody on the delegation, yourself included, to become a cheerleader for any one of these countries or relationships. But go tell the truth of what you saw and heard. I think it's positive, but there are some problems mixed in there, too.
Yeah. Well, I've certainly been telling people, and I hope all of our listeners will take this as an opportunity to learn more, to go further and to do more to bless Israel and the neighboring countries in the name of Jesus. And Joel,
right,
I want
right.
to thank
and
you.
Let me just say one other thing. Obviously, at the core of the Joshua Fund is how many people in this region have read the Bible, heard the Bible, understand the Bible in their heart languages? Do they know the good news of Jesus? Do they understand why the church is a blessing to nations and not a curse? Do they let these churches operate freely? Do they let people make their own choices whether they want to follow Jesus or not? These are important. This is at the core of what we do. Yeah. Now, there's a lot of other things we do to show the love of Jesus through humanitarian relief, but also through education. And I'm fascinated that we are now at a moment where Israeli leaders at the highest levels and Arab Muslim leaders at the highest levels are saying one of our major felt needs is that people we theologically completely disagree with would at least tell the truth about who we are.
Yeah.
And why we should be seen as the good guys and not the bad guys. That is a big deal. And I think it's part of the educational mission of the Joshua Fund. It's not all of what we do, but it's a significant part of what we do. And, when we started this podcast, I didn't know that more doors were going to open like this. Right. I thought 6 delegations. That was enough. Dianu, right? But more doors are
opening. More
are
coming and more are coming still.
Perhaps.
Right. Well, I want to thank you, Joel, and I want to thank you for listening and watching this podcast. And if you want to learn more about the Joshua Fund, go to our website at joshuafund.com. And there you can learn about what we're doing in the Middle East to bless Israel and her neighbors in the name of Jesus, and how you can participate in the healing work we're doing in this region. Okay. And as always, if you'd like to know more, you can check out our show notes for anything you heard on this podcast you'd like more information on. For Joel Rosenberg, I'm Carl Muller. Thanks for listening to this episode of Inside the Epicenter.
From Jerusalem.
From Jerusalem.
Amen.
Hello, I'm Adam Comer.
And I'm Ryan Chittister.
And we are the host of Life After Addiction podcast. What we believe is that addiction is not a surprise to God.
That's right. We discuss addiction from a biblical worldview and how true freedom comes through a personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
Absolute freedom from addiction, the secular worldview of once an addict, always an addict, is just not true. If you or someone you love struggles with addiction, subscribe to Life After Addiction at lifeaudio.com.